Whether you're at the base of your own personal Everest, navigating the twists and turns of your career, or simply seeking inspiration to keep climbing, join us as we embark on a shared expedition of growth, learning, and triumph, where every step forward is a victory and every story shared is a beacon of hope. I'm your host, David, and together, let's ascend to new heights. Welcome to the Climbing the Ladder podcast. All right, we are here with Matt, episode 5. This was kind of a last minute deal.
It was.
I sent it out of the blue a little bit. So,
and I'm good with it.
For those that don't know, Matt currently is a real estate agent and also the fearless leader of the Tennessee Drivers Club, who we host drives, try to do it every weekend in the summer, but...
And I didn't give my, I didn't don that name on myself, right? So that's, I mean, I'm a little bit full of myself to a degree.
That's what we call them.
Yeah, so. But okay, you know, it wasn't my call, but yeah, man, definitely happy to be here.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming out. It's, I mean, that's really how we met is the car community. That seems to be how everybody meets in similar hobbies around here, whether it be real estate or myself with detailing. That's how I meet a lot of the upper end clients anyway that come to the Tennessee Drivers Club, and a lot of the club members are clients of mine. I've done quite a bit of work with them.
Yeah.
But I asked you to come on because you had a little career shift in, say, the last 20 years, law enforcement to real estate and some stuff in between. So you want to give us a little introduction of yourself?
And absolutely. And so first, glad to be here on this casting couch or, you know, whatever you want to call it.
The last couple ones was my shop waiting room couch stuff we tried in episode 2. Yeah. That's not comfortable if you sit there longer than an hour. And then I did the director's chairs with Chad Fincham in his garage.
Yeah.
And those were much more comfortable, but it was like sitting straight up.
Yeah.
I figure this time it's with you especially, it's time to just lay back and just shoot it. So,
you know, I think one of the first things that I said to you after you reached out to me, like, hey, you want to be on? Awesome. But if I can't drink or swear, like, I am effed. So I should have done a shot prior to coming.
You just edited yourself there. You can say it.
You know, like, okay. Like, I'm trying to be a little bit more reticent about it, but you know, it's, I'm glad to be here. I appreciate what you're doing. You know, our relationship has, I didn't even intend to, but you know, 318 and 11, right? It's all about the tail of the dragon. That's kind of.
I actually wore the Viper shirt too because the car community started it all, so it was something related. I didn't have a TDC shirt, so I appreciate you bringing one for sure.
Like, you have me on your podcast, the least I can do is give you a nifty shirt.
I should have brought a flag and put up here.
I have our banner. Like, I literally hang our banner right above my bed, you know, so I can open my eyes and see it now. But yeah, so that's kind of how we got linked up. Was, you know, really that stretch of pavement. And that's how a lot of my relationships have kind of come to be over the last, like 4 or 5 years now. So very, very thankful for the car community. It's been a breath of fresh air. Do you know how kind of, and I won't go too much into it, but let me just start by saying, and we'll get to that later, but let me just start by saying, as far as TDC goes, that all started out of desperation, right? And as far as like, basically, my wife came to me and was like, you need to make some friends and get the fuck out of the house or I'm going to leave you.
And, that's kind of why how I ended up at the Hub. When it started to open up when David owned it, it was, oh, there's somewhere to stop before driving all the way to the Dragon.
Right.
So now we have a time to, you could either chill there, turn around, go to the Parkway, go to the Dragon, instead of driving all the way up to the Overlook or to the store.
Yeah.
Like, this is going to take an hour to find out that there's nobody there.
Yeah, exactly. So thank you to my wife for helping push me to start that. And then thanks for, honestly, David, everything that he did at the Hub. And now it's in, you know, Josh's and Joanna's amazing hands.
Yeah,
so.
And I don't think I've been there since it's been open, since they've took ownership. I had a couple driver's meetings there, but I haven't actually been there to eat or anything.
Yeah, they got some
driving
cool
by
stuff.
It looks like it's changed quite a bit for the better.
Yeah, absolutely. So so not to pivot, but my time in law enforcement. So, you know, I got into the profession again when I actually got my start was in 2014, but just a little backstory, you know, because I like to tell stories like a Scorsese movie, you know, like start at the beginning, go to the end, work your way to the middle.
Easiest way to follow,
you know, lines. So, 2009, I'm doing a BS job that I don't like, kind of like you've done before, right? And my head's not in it, my heart's not in it. Ended up losing my job at the time I was doing collections for auto finance. So, just awful.
That sounds like a very fun job.
Bro.
Everybody hates you. Yeah.
I wanted to start my Glock like every morning. It was horrible. Anyway, lost my job there and, you know, kind of directionless, you know, as all young, angsty 20 something year old men are. And I'm like, all right, you know, what am I going to do? Like, I want to make a difference. You know, I want to help people. That was part of the reason. You know, realistically, though, it was like, I need some structure. Like, yeah. I'm spinning. I don't know which way I need to go. So, awesome. Let's roll the dice. And let's go towards law enforcement.
That's kind of how, when I got released from the Braves and before I transitioned into independent ball to kind of try to stay into professional baseball, that was my next step was baseball and professional sports is very similar to law enforcement as far and military as far as mentality goes.
Yeah.
You have your superiors. You have to listen to them, what they say. You got to go. You got to dress a certain way. You got
to be ready to go.
You got to shave, like specific stuff.
Paramilitary, so, for sure.
I felt like that was going to be a natural transition from professional sports to at least when you start the police academy or anything like that, you have to be in shape. You have to do something. So that was a good jump for me. And then I went through the hiring process in Oak Ridge and come to find out from like, I think there was like five of us left to be selected. And it came down to my nationality. And because I'm a Canadian citizen in Tennessee, I can't be a law enforcement officer in Tennessee without a citizenship.
Dang.
And I didn't know that. Like, I can work. I have a permanent resident card, but I didn't know that as far as law enforcement goes. It could have changed now.
Yeah.
But that's what they said then. And I was like, great. And that's what started my transition into crappy jobs year after year.
You had to pivot, bro. And you know, what's funny is when I didn't know that until I watched your episode with Frank Balls. I'm like, well, he's Canadian. Like I expected like your mouth, your jaw to be disconnected, you
South
know,
Park fan.
Yeah, exactly.
I've lived here too long.
it's gone. It's washed away. When I went through the academy, did great, enjoyed it. And then, I got the air or the wind ripped out of my sails because I got on with an agency, a 6-month hiring process. Yeah. Like, you know, you're talking like aside from the physical testing, you have all the mental testing.
Under scrutiny here lately with a lot of the stuff that's happened in recent years is that they feel like police officer training isn't long enough for the stuff they have to deal with on a daily basis.
Dude, I'm going to tell you, it's never going to be long enough and it's not going to matter.
Everything's different.
Single day you start, you have absolutely no idea.
And
what
the hours
of
ride-alongs we had to do when I was doing even Oak Ridge and even recently with Blount County, I've done a few ride-alongs. Some of the stuff they deal with, people would never imagine. I feel like it should be mandatory for at least a citizen to do one shift on a ride-along just to see what they have to deal with.
Yeah, and you know, because what you're dealing with in law enforcement typically, and not to get too off track, but it's important, you have 10% of the population 90% of the time, right? Yeah. So you or I, you know, the normal everyday person isn't going to encounter law enforcement unless it's a traffic stop. And like, oh my God, my seatbelt, it wasn't on, you know, whereas the other small percentage of it is going to be calling because somebody's beating their old lady again, you know, and they just shot up a house, you know.
That's the biggest thing I saw is a lot of the domestic calls are just people getting in arguments and they're in that type of lifestyle that they just don't really know how to deal with it. They've never been taught. They didn't come up with it.
You babysit adults and help them raise their children.
Yeah.
Like that, and it sounds so silly when I say it that way, but that's the truth. Like basic logic, functionality that you or I are like, of course.
It's
we would never
nature. Like you don't have to you don't have to think about it.
For them, you're like, wait, like you mean I have to feed my child every day and like I can't just let them roam
in
a diaper?
Cigarettes.
Yeah,
he can't change. Exactly. I need to smoke.
It's like, no, I'm sorry. Let me just ash them out on them.
I noticed
that
in between seasons, I lived in Rockwood and in between baseball seasons, I worked at a drive-through convenience store just to spend time in the winter.
Yeah.
And the amount of people that would come through there buy beer and cigarettes with cash and then
pull out the wick or, you know, whatever.
And then food stamps for bread. And I was like, really? Like this is because that's unheard of in Canada.
Yeah.
The way I grew up anyway. Right. So that was like an eye opener for me when I first
especially if you're young and struggling and trying to do things the right way, you're like, I can't afford half this crap.
I'm working minimum wage right here.
Yeah.
And I play professional baseball. But we don't get paid in the off season.
Yeah.
So I need to pay bills there. Right. I'm working $7, $8 an hour. I don't remember what, but it wasn't much.
Yeah.
And here's your cash, and then my taxes paying for your bread. You know what I mean? Like it kind of that was an eye opener for me for the South when I first got here.
And it makes you kind of realize and you know, it makes you realize that not everybody plays by the same rules, but it also makes you appreciate, at least for me, it makes me appreciate that I'm gonna do the right thing and I know it's the right thing and nobody is going to change that. You know, like integrity is a big thing and that's always a hot topic, you know, with law enforcement and everything.
Well,
but
even TDC, we've kicked out guys for that exact reason, just the type of person they are.
I mean,
it sounds bad that way, but it's all about safety, really.
It is because it's when you have, you can assume many patterns just from the ego of a person. And it's not, you know, you don't want to always pass assumptions or judgments about people, but when you give them enough rope and you watch them hang themselves with it, they could pull themselves up, but they choose to do the other thing. And that, and you just let people be who they are. Right. So ego plays a big role. And I'll touch some more on that in just a little bit, but you absolutely have to be vigilant and kind of look out for the herd. You know, when I started in law enforcement, I wanted to help, you know, those people. I wanted to be, you know, the person who would get justice for someone, the person who would, you know, protect a victim, you know, from becoming a victim again. And the more and more I went through it, the further and further away I got from what my purpose was. So to kind of take you through it, went through the process, didn't get hired on, and ended up pivoting, moved out of state. I went to the academy in Florida. It was a 6-month process, met some great people, still friends with some of them today. I worked alongside some of them when I finally did get on. Went and worked for TSA up in Georgia for a couple years. The federal government, by the way, just a little side note. Like, I can.
When you say federal government with a laugh behind it, you got to see where this goes.
Anything that has a letter agency is just an absolute stain on American history. So I hate to say it like that, but I'll just be direct. So anyway, I went there, worked for TSA. Yes, I was one of the guys who would have to move it to the side, you know, and check, make sure you didn't have, you know, a bomb up your ass and take your water bottle and be like, you can't have this. It can be an explosive, but throw it in a bin with other explosives close by. So I got out of that. It was a horseshit job. Met some interesting people, but you're like, they incentivize like laziness. And for whatever reason, egos run wild there. People are like, oh, I got my, you know, little cloth badge.
Yeah.
I can stop you from getting on this airplane. I'll make this. Yeah. Anyway.
You got that power trip that, not to say that those that failed the police academy or wanted to get into that life, and it was kind of like secure, like get it into security.
Absolutely,
you couldn't make that step, but now you have a badge. Yeah, you can tell
that
people
Dillard's
what to
do. Is mine. Don't fuck around with Dillard's because you're going to the office, and then I'm going to call the real.
You're not
police.
You're not security guard. You're loss prevention.
Exactly. I'm LP, buddy. So you know, I did that for a few years, and my wife and I just decided to have been together 2 decades. And we had an opportunity to move back to Florida where family was, where my certification was. And so we jumped at that opportunity. Get down there, get on with dispatch for a local agency in Central Florida. That's where I did my career. That's where I worked. And after a few months working dispatch with this agency, kind of learning a little bit about how they operate, potentially wanted to get on with them. Ended up, I reapplied for the agency that turned me down the first time and got on with them. And instead of a 6-month process, new leadership, great sheriff. And that went to, it was about a 1-month process and I started. So awesome. Super glad about that. Get on, go through their training. It's a long process. You got about a month and a half of classroom training, refreshers, all that, basically learning how to be cop for them.
Doing it their way, not your way.
Yeah. And knowing, you know, policies, SOPs. And then it's like, cool, let's go to field training. So, you know, again, you never know what you're going to encounter, but you do field training. You basically follow shadow, then you take lead, and then they shadow you type thing. And
when,
that goes
when
on
you started
months.
Field training, is it an area that you knew well, or was it completely different?
Yeah, so it actually worked out because even though we weren't living in this area, I grew up in this area.
That makes I feel like that would make it a lot easier instead of going to somewhere across the country where you didn't grow up. You have no idea about the roads and. Then you got to learn all these.
And that's a big thing because a lot of people fail the first month of FTO because they don't know their direction. They don't know where they're at. Yeah. I mean, you'll be driving. Your FTO will stop, you know, put down the window, say, I'm shot. Where are we?
Yeah.
And you're like, and I've been preparing for this. I'm like, I know he's going to ask me. And then he asked me, I'm like, shit. I have no
idea.
You're
in the car.
Yeah, I'm like, we're on Earth. It's a lovely day. Instant fail. Yeah, you know, it was funny. Prior to coming to this, like I told you, I think some of it happened from law enforcement, but my short-term memory doesn't work the way it used to. So like, I lean on my wife a lot to recall things. So even this morning, I'm like, hey, babe, do you remember like some of the things, you know, because I was just kind of scratching my brain, you know, going back for some scenarios and some things that had occurred. You know, and she was like, well, remember your very first day in field training? So what happened with that one? It's kind of silly, but it was just ridiculous because here I am like wet behind the ears. I'm 26 years old, you know, got my uniform, like first day. I'm like, oh God, like don't poop my pants, you know, get to a call. It's 4:00 in the morning, you know, when we started. And yeah, first thing is this dude beat up his boyfriend with a baseball bat and he's covered in blood and he has HIV. So I'm like, what do I do?
That wasn't part of field training.
Yeah. I was like, this isn't in the manual. How do I get to this one? So right out of the gate, it's just like, this is chaos. Like it's literally,
you come in imagining it how it would be. And it's so much more than what you could expect.
Yeah. And you know, one of the best things that, somebody told me when I first got into the field was, you know, being a good cop is using your mind and your brain first, using your voice and your words second, and then only if you have to, relying on your training, your tools, and your hands to be third.
That can be transitioned to just a citizen in general.
In general. Like, yeah, because people...
Don't speak before you think.
Yeah,
God. Don't hit somebody before you think.
God knows. Yeah, exactly. Because without substance abuse and mental illness are like why we have like 90% of law enforcement involvement to begin with. Like it all kind of comes down to those things. But yeah, just taking that moment just to kind of think through things or have that foresight. I don't know, maybe parts of their brain, you know, the prefrontal cortex or amygdala, whatever, maybe that's like shrunken or something or impacted in some way and they don't think through these things logically.
Either way, it's something you're going to have to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I was always where I excelled, and the constant feedback I got was, you know, you're articulate, you know, you can, you're eloquent, you can speak well, and you can write a great report. And honestly, those things right there will help make you a good cop.
I think speaking well, just in general in life, will give you a better image than you would. So when I moved here, you know, the Southern accent I was having trouble understanding people when I first moved here.
Yeah.
Now it's not a problem. I mean, if you've heard heard Hope, or if you ever met her mom, they're very, very Southern Tennessee.
Right.
And I wasn't used to that. And it's just like somebody going over to England, you hear somebody speak from across the pond. They sound intelligent.
Right.
Even if they're not.
Yeah.
Like it's just how it is. And it's just the way you sound. True. It's a first impression thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's funny because I used that strength for me, I was good at talking people into handcuffs, right? But that was out of necessity because I think I weighed when I started maybe 160 pounds. Like
you didn't want to scrap with somebody.
Bro, I didn't if this big drunk dude wants to fight, like I'm going to die. So I need to figure out like how to talk to him in handcuffs, you know, and if not, like how to basically posture him, stall him long enough. So that way, like we can get like my big zone partner or this other dude or, you know, somebody else to get in there. So that way we can
delay him enough to where somebody else can help too.
Exactly. But you know, it's, and I still do this in general, like nobody else but me controls my emotions, right? I don't rise to the level that people are at. Because then that gives them power, you know? And so for me, it's
I can't say the same.
What? Are you sure, bro? I've never known you to be a hothead even a little bit. And also, it's not like sports didn't help that at all. You know what I mean? You have to be. But, you know, realistically, it's like, okay, like the louder they get, the quieter I get, right? When they escalate, de-escalate. And you can literally, if somebody's yelling at you or screaming about the situation, you can speak softer and you actually watch them kind of like lean their head in a little bit, trying to hear you and understand you. And at that point, it's like, awesome, I've got them. Let me bring them down a little bit.
Well, we can do that even from a business standpoint, as a customer business owner relationship. If they have an issue and they're beyond reasoning or talking to, and they're just wanting to yell and complain, it's one of those kill them with kindness things. It's they'll get more upset that you're being nice about it than the problem itself. And then it eventually works itself out to where you can have a normal conversation.
Yeah.
Or it doesn't. And in some cases, you're like, you can leave now,
but
not necessarily that nicely. You've heard my reputation with the shop at some point. So, but we'll get into that later as far as my shop personality and outside the shop
personality. It's different, guys. It's actually different. I will say, we had that conversation.
Treat it like a character versus a person.
Yeah. And you gotta be when you're there, you have to be in that mindset. Like it's business. I'm all business. It's not what you have to do. It's who you have to become in those moments, you know?
Well, even as a business owner, you have to be the bad guy at some point. You have to, there's no way around it.
Yeah. Well, while we're on it, let's just keep it going for a second. So one of the things that I told David, and this was, I don't know, this was probably last year
or a year ago, 2 or 3 months ago.
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah.
And I don't remember, we were talking about something or I reached out, you had expressed something, you know, and during that conversation, your grievances were real. They were correct. They were just, and it made sense, right? And we were just coming off of doing one of our charity events together with the club. And you and Hope do a massive amount for those charity events. It's awesome having you guys be a part of it. Side note. But I think I straight up said, I'm like, dude, you need to share more of this, or you need to put this out there, because the David in person versus the asshole David online, like, there's a big delta there. And I think that you should show a little bit more of that, so that way people have a better understanding of, you know, why you do what you do, but also, like, you genuinely care about people. Well, you're fantastic with Hope and the kids.
A lot of people don't understand that employees aside, people, as a business owner, people that you fired or people that you've hired, you're going to have the people that hate you are going to be ex-employees, their friends, or your competition. It's always going to be like that. So everybody's going to be upset about losing their job. Yeah. So there's always going to be back and forth when that happens. But eventually it dies down. And honestly, I think 80% of our staff mm-hmm. has been let go at least once and come back. Yeah. So that tells a story in itself. But me, myself, online versus in person, like I was telling you earlier before we started, Hope and I don't have a lot of close friends. Mm-hmm. Every time we've let somebody into our lives for a long period of time, we've ended up getting stabbed in the back.
Yeah.
At least that's what it feels like, whether they did it intentionally or not.
Right.
Like, they've got relationships with the kids, or they've been over here day in and day out for a year.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they disappear. Like, we did something wrong, and we have no idea physically what we did or mentally what we did.
Yeah.
It just kind of blew up in our face. And I was mm-hmm. like, I can't do this anymore. So I think the online thing is me not getting close to people. But when we get into an atmosphere like the TDC group, where everybody has a common interest or a common hobby.
Or at least there's a mutual trust and understanding.
It's easy to get along with people that way. And that's kind of what brings out me as a person versus online, where I'm dealing with a bunch of haters. And
people get so vile online for whatever reason.
Because you can't get punched in the face.
Yeah, the safety of the computer, man. And for us, like, I feel like we're not only are we on our best behavior in the group, but it really is just kind of a natural thing, because it would go against the herd, right? If everybody else is being, you know, kind, polite, helpful, interesting, interested, you know, and sharing a passion, then if you have somebody who comes in and stands out, like, it's like, awesome. The ants attack it, you know, it's like it takes care of itself. Yeah. Like, you are an outsider. Stop being an outsider. Fall in line with the rest of us.
We had the situation that happened last year with one of the, we post all the pictures all the time with TDC, especially I'm very active on Facebook, as mm-hmm. you know. I'll post pictures of whatever we're eating today. Just to get somebody to say something.
Yeah,
about
absolutely.
It. And the TDC has a lot of members with very nice cars. I mm-hmm. mean, we're talking Lamborghinis, McLarens, Ferraris.
Yeah.
But that's not everything. That's just what everybody takes pictures of.
Yeah.
And then another group member at least separated or wasn't joined, or you didn't message him back or something, because heck, you don't get messages all the time about joining the club.
Yeah.
He decided to make his own club membership. And just the first post he made was like, oh, you don't need a Lamborghini to join our club. You can come have fun.
Remember
that?
Yeah. He sent me that. I'm like,
I was like, that's just not what it's about.
Yeah.
I mean, and that stuff like that really hits home for as much as you do and we do as far as charities.
Yeah.
We're people with a common goal and a common interest.
Right. Whether don't that relegate be, it that yeah, we pick whether somebody that be, over you.
Sure. Everybody's successful. I mean,
we have people from all walks of life, man. Yeah. You know,
bring it out. As long as you can drive safely within your means,
right,
and not hold the group back or endanger somebody else. Yes. Come on,
then you're good.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. You know, and so I think it's I'm glad we're kind of touching on this, because I think it is important for, you know, people to know that, you know what, don't judge people just based on what you see. Like, if for me, if somebody has an issue with me, I want to know what I did to wrong them, right?
So I use that at the shop too. Yeah. Like, if people have an issue or employees have an issue, let one of the leadership people know. Because if we don't know about it, we can't address it. We can't fix it. And if that doesn't happen, all it does is go back and forth between people, and it just gets worse.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, well, they don't care. They didn't change anything. Well, nobody told us about it.
Right.
So how are we supposed to fix it?
Yeah. And then, you know, you have people who are just despondent, or they're, you know, they are, I guess, upset or disgruntled. And then they try and spread that. And like, I just don't have time for that. You know, like, life's too short. Like, seeing people die in front of you, you know, clutching a mom as she's like holding her son who's passing away. You know what I mean? Like seeing that kind of shit puts it in perspective for you because you're like, this stuff isn't important. Yeah. It's just not worth the time, you know? And not to pivot, you know, back to the law enforcement stuff with that thought process that you and I share, right? I feel like because law enforcement sees so much of that on a recurring basis, they have to get jaded or they have to let certain parts of themselves die or at least.
Well, it's just in traffic stops, for instance, everybody's like, oh, that cop was a dick. Well, the people they deal with every day, they don't know who they're coming up on in a traffic stop. They have to have that same outlook in everybody they meet. They can't be super nice and then you end up with recently a police officer shot and killed.
Yeah.
And that was probably the most professional traffic stop I've ever seen from the body cam footage.
And it's tragic because it shocks, you know, it shocks the community, it shocks the town, you know, and what happens now at that point is everybody's hypervigilant, everybody's hyper aware, right? And you know, in Florida, when I was going through, and this was somewhat challenging for me, but I never stopped to really think about it until the last couple of years and even check with my wife, how difficult was it for her? Because when I went to the academy, two cops, Curtis and Kocab, got murdered on a traffic stop. And then a year later, I believe it was Crispin got killed in Lakeland. And then there was Batinger got killed in St. Pete 2 years after that. Charlie Kondek was a neighboring agency. He got killed rolling up to a sound complaint.
It's a big part of the job that you don't.
It is, but here being such a small town and an area where people, you know, people are so much more connected, I would say, or at least, you know, it seems like the type of people you interact with, there's more people who are more trusting of law enforcement, who support them more. Whereas
it's a much smaller world. You know, like, you know, his mom or you know, his wife or you know, his son, your son's friends with his son.
Absolutely.
It's a very close-knit community in that
way. And so the impact is so much greater when it does happen, right?
It hits you close to home. Yeah. It's not like, oh, that doesn't happen to me. That happened in California. That happened right down the road.
Yeah. 5 miles from my house, man. It was so bizarre, you know, because since we've been here, I'm like, this hasn't happened. And some of the officer safety stuff is, you know, is difficult to see here sometimes too, but it's probably because they haven't had certain events like this ever occur. But now they're going to be
more visual. It's going to change policies.
It will change policing. Yeah.
Even if they did everything right, it's going to change something.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, like, you never know, to your point, you never know what you're walking up on. You know, for me, I approached every situation, every scenario. You know, people are like, well, you got to make sure you're respecting, blah, blah, blah. For me, as a cop in law enforcement, I was mindful and respectful. I walk up, doesn't matter who you are, I was mindful and respectful of you until it wasn't time to be mindful and respectful.
And that's kind of how I treat finishing touch as well. Everybody has this mentality of the type of person I am when it comes to ownership.
Yeah.
I will match energy that comes through the door.
Yeah.
If you come in yelling and screaming, you're going to get it back. I'm not the type of person that the customer is always right. You're here for a specialized service. That's just how I've always run it.
Yeah.
But if you come in nice, calm, and controlled, you have an issue.
Yeah.
Talk about it as an issue.
Right.
And it usually works out for the better for both parties.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I did just a little bit as far as, you know, my career. I did going about 3 or so years on patrol. During that time, for the last, you know, 8 months, year, whatever it was, they had me step into field training. So new people coming on. And that's kind of quick, right? But it's amazing how fast you can move up if you read, keep your mouth shut, and just do your job.
I find teaching something.
You learn it 90% faster. Yeah, 90% more. You retain the information 90% more when you try and teach it than if you just you know, read it and learn it. And then plus it's a cyclical thing because it kind of feeds on itself. Once you start doing that, you start learning more. You get more passionate about it. You know, you want to share that information. I love teaching. I love educating. I got to do that in law enforcement. I got to do that in other jobs before. I've gotten to do that in real estate, right? Because I got to educate people on, you know, what they're looking for, especially first time home buyers, what the process is. You don't know what
that's
you don't know.
That's always scary. Going through that the first time was an absolute
so convoluted
nightmare.
Man.
Like I think we put offers on like 6 houses, and everyone that was either failed home inspection or they got another offer, and we were just like,
oh, you're beating
that
down,
was
dude.
The house.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And it just blows the wind out of your sails.
Yeah, you get beaten down. You know, and for me, it really it was very demanding. Probably the most demanding job in law enforcement is being a field training officer. I'll just tell you that. And I'm sure there's a lot of people right now, you know, when they see this, they're like, yeah, that's right. Thank you. And I only did this for, you know, about maybe 6 or 8 months. So it wasn't a long time. I had 5 trainees come through in that time.
Did they all make it to patrol?
Every single one of them did.
So you're a good trainer.
Yeah. You know, I like to learn from my mistakes. So let me just tell you like a little stupid war story, but there's a lesson behind it. And it's actually one that saved my life. And this is a story that I told all of my trainees. One of them didn't listen to the story, and I almost listened to him be murdered on the radio. Okay.
Huh.
So yeah, it's an interesting one. So a couple years on, where I'm at, we have a mix of multiple incorporated cities. And a bunch of rural farmland as well. So it's a big mix, right? As far as every sect of people that you can imagine was found in this county. So sometimes it would happen that you're the only car available or you're the only car in the area and nobody else can get to you for 25 minutes.
That's very much like Blount County. So people that don't know Blount County, it is a massive area.
Yeah.
It's not just like the city of Maryville and all that stuff. It is
tons of square miles.
Severo Road and all the way. Yeah. Like, it's crazy.
And you can't go as the crow flies. So if you need to get somebody, it's going to take you 30 minutes to get there.
If you need backup, they could be 20 miles away.
Yep, absolutely.
So that's an issue.
So, you know, with this call came out, and I was working day shift at this time. So people think, oh, day shift, that's the, like, stuff goes wild and sideways on day shift plenty. So, you know, comes in, suspicious person call, parked in front of a gas station. Some guy was like rummaging through a vehicle, acting a little erratic. That's the call. That's it. That's all we know.
That's
okay.
That's your everyday call.
Exactly. Like, well, he's probably a meth head. I don't know. Like, yeah, he's erratic. He's looking for batteries and shiny objects. So start rolling to the call. Look, you know, I'm like, okay, there's going to be a guy there that I'm going to have to interact with. Let me see what another unit is. Oh, nobody's available. All right, whatever. Start heading that way, and I ask dispatch, hey, can you give me the tag on it? They give me the tag. I run it as I'm heading there. Hey, dispatch, that's a stolen vehicle. Can you please send me another unit? doing their job for them. And they get busy. It happens. But so lights and sirens. I start hauling ass that way. But it's like, great. I'm going to get there. What now? I roll up to it, go drop down to code 2. So my sirens go off as I'm approaching the area. All I see is it's a gas station. You know, they have a few pumps. It's not crowded. It's one of those old country gas stations, right? With the pumps from like 1970. It's like
an old Gulf station.
Yeah, nothing digital. Exactly, bro. And you know, so it's like, you know, they're going to have great chicken inside, though. They always have like the best food at some of those bars.
Bold hot dogs.
Yes. Oh, God. Get there. I see the passenger side door open, driver's side door open. I pull in, but it's just my vehicle. It's an open parking lot. So my thought process, you make a plan, you execute, and you hope it goes according to that plan, right? So in my mind, as I'm approaching there, going through the motions, I'm like, all right, so let me go and let me try and block in the vehicle, initially make contact, and depending on, you know, what he's doing, gain compliance right away, order him down, because it is a felony stop at this point. Yeah. It's a stolen vehicle. So at that point, it's not just a, hey, bud, how you doing?
How you doing? Come over?
No, it's like guns drawn, felony stop outside of the vehicle, pull them out, handcuff them, get them under compliance, get them into the vehicle, secure them, whatever you got to do. Sounds great, right? Fantastic theory. Roll up.
Never works like that.
Yeah. roll up. Try and block the vehicle a little bit with my one car that I am. Come around. Guy pops his head out, sees me. Stop. Choo. Takes off immediately. Bro, this dude was like, oh my God, this dude was so fast. It was, and again, probably the drugs. Bolted, took off around the side of the building. At this point, oh shit. All right. So I start running after this guy, you know, secure the vehicle because cops always leave their vehicles unlocked. So I'm locking my doors as I'm running, calling out to dispatch, foot pursuit, trying to call out male. He had a gray shirt on. That's all I remember. I remember his face. I remember the rest of it. So given a description, running, he's running around this gas station. It's a decent sized strip. And then towards these woods. So in my mind, oh crap, he's going to get in there. We're going to have to get a perimeter going on this guy. Well, he beelines it, comes back around the gas station. I'm continuing to pursue. He is smoking me, dude. Like, We started out close, but we did not end close. Yeah. He is hauling. And plus, I've got 30 pounds of gear on me. Like, you know, I'm trying to run. I'm freaking puffing and, you know, huffing and puffing. So this is where the learning starts, right? Guy comes around. I digress. He's there in a stolen vehicle. This is how the whole thing started, okay? I get there. He jumps back into the same car he was in, starts it, re-steals the car, and blows past me as I'm trying to get back into my squad car. So, yeah, I'll give myself a slow clap. Like, the rookie shit the bed, okay? Well, anyway, my sergeant gets there.
So he ran, he Mickey Mouse, he ran around the gas station, got
in
the car,
straight up Benny Hill, like, ba-ban-dan-dan, just running around, you know, hops in. So I'm like, motherfucker, like, how do I say this on the radio? So I get on, call out dispatch.
That's how you get nicknames.
He's back in the vehicle and he's fleeing south towards the next jurisdiction, next jurisdiction, massive city, in Central Florida. So, as soon as I say I'm getting my car, starting pursue, sergeant comes on the radio, call it off. We'll get him another day. All right, cool. I'm going to stand by and hold what I got for a witness statement.
And chances are he's probably going to end up back at that gas station at some point.
So later on, through some investigating, I ended up figuring out that he was actually, so I got him ID'd later because I looked through the call history and about 2 hours earlier, we had a domestic dispute that came up right down the road behind the gas station. Went and talked to them, got some information from them. The lady didn't want to cooperate. Her mom ended up telling us who he was. So I ran him, found his information, sent out a bolo because he was in that type of vehicle. She told us all about it. It matched the same description. Well, so yeah, I caught some flack for sure. But here's why I talk about the real lesson. There's multiple here, right? It compounds, okay? So this guy, to your point earlier, you don't know what you're getting into. This guy, the very next day, a major agency right next door spies a vehicle. They go to stop, takes off, crashes the vehicle, gets out, carjacks a woman at gunpoint, rips her out of the vehicle, steals her car, gets pursued into another neighboring jurisdiction. They get on him. He destroys that vehicle, runs out, sees he's cornered, shoots himself in the head in the middle of a crowded intersection. Dead right there. Okay. So for me, yes, I definitely ate it, right? I'm like, man, that dude smoked me and stole the car in front of me. Like, I felt like an idiot. And then in that same breath, you know, the next day, it's like, was he going to murder me if I found it? What happened if I caught him?
Was he going for a gun in the car? Like, what's something? You have no idea.
No idea, right? So
that's what gets your mind rolling too when you get into those situations.
And you're just thinking, and the hairs on the back of your neck stand up, and you're like, that could have gone so different. What if I had the guy? Like, could I have controlled him? Did he have the firearm on him? Was it that what he was digging for in the car?
It's that butterfly effect. It was even like in a Tennessee, in a driver situation, not necessarily the group. We haven't had an accident in the group ever.
I'm knocking on wood. We're doing good.
I have been in groups where there's been accidents. It was like, oh, well, if we waited for that car, would that have happened?
Right.
20 minutes later. You know what I mean?
You just go back and replay in your head,
it just
man.
Plays over and over.
And, you know, that story I shared with all of my trainees, right? Like, listen, we could catch the bad guy another day. You can't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. If you go out and you get yourself killed because you're running hot, you're trying to grab somebody, trying to fight somebody, running into a situation where you could stage, if the situation doesn't demand immediate action, stop and think, right? Stack the odds in your favor. You don't always have that luxury. We train for mass shootings multiple times per year, and that was always you're going. There's no waiting.
It's another thing that's been slowly escalating here in the U.S.
Dude, you know, I'll tell you. I have my thoughts on some of that and the way some of them are done, some are handled. You see the way some are handled well, and you see the way some are not handled well. But I will tell you from personal experience, I went to what came out as a mass shooting, and I arrived with over 1,000 people in a large crowded area. Multiple shots were fired prior to us getting there, and it was absolute chaos. But you know what? I looked around my left, my right, everybody was there. Yeah. Everybody was geared up and running towards where the problem was, right? So that was a great way to be like, you know what? Like, we train, it's important, but we also have that warrior mindset going into it. And that's something that perpetuates itself.
And it could scare some people, like we were talking earlier, is it could, you could run into one thing on the job that completely changes your mind about your career path.
Yeah.
It was as a police officer and field training and stuff, you come across your first child or infant death.
Yeah.
That affects a lot of people in a different way. Like,
yeah,
you see an old lady or a younger guy that's hung himself. It's not as hit home as that's right. A child.
Yeah.
That can switch on you at any time.
I feel the worst for the guys, you know, a lot of my buddies who have kids, right? Especially when it came to child abuse, sexual abuse, all that. Like it
goes to your kids or the kids, you know,
yeah,
like, that could be them.
Yeah. And you're like, these people exist among us, you know?
And that was a big part of your law enforcement career till later. It was like child trafficking.
And- yeah. So for the last, about 6 or 8 months, about 6 months on the job, I got, promoted from an economic crimes detective and I got moved over to vice narcotics, and doing human trafficking. And
that's gotta be tough.
You know, in my time there, had a lot of cases chased with a lot of dead ends, hit a lot of roadblocks in it, because that type of thing, it's so difficult to break into, right? Like, it's so deep. There's so many layers to it that you don't just stumble into a massive trafficking ring. But you really start to see just the depravity of the people that exist among you. And it really, really puts a sour taste in your mouth. But also, you know, resources for the victims. So just to fast forward a little bit as far as, you know, what I was doing then, I have to be selective, and I'll just say this as a little disclaimer. I have to be careful and selective about some of the things that I touch on here, specifically because some of these cases are still active. There's a federal nexus to some of them, and, you know, down the road, this could potentially be called back into court if, yeah, you know, if I say certain things or share certain things, certain information. But three things happened, in my law enforcement career, over the years that had me really questioning or wanting to get out of it. And the human trafficking side was the final straw. The very first thing that happened was, and this sounds kind of silly. But to me, it's very important. So I touched on, my wife and I have been together for a very long time. It's her and I, right? We've got our dogs, no kids. We jumped off the marriage plank a long time ago, and it's us. We have each other's backs. So we've been through thick and thin, ups and downs. And
some of the stuff you guys post online, you can tell you guys have that close knit relationship. You guys are one unit is the best way I can describe it.
Dude, we are. And there's nothing in my mind that would ever drive a wedge between us, because we simply won't let it. So it's very important to me that what I do impacts her positively, or that she's taken care of and regarded in some way. So, you know, like, being in Florida, you get hurricanes often. But if you haven't lived in Florida, people don't understand that, like, the news is literally telling you for a week straight that this storm is going to hit you, destroy every single thing you own and cherish and love. Like, prepare for the end of the world.
My parents have a house in Davenport. Right down there. The last big hurricane, I can't remember what name it was, but, like, they were making such a big deal that you got to leave, you got to go back home for a week. And I think they had like two screens blown out.
Yeah. And then the storm swings and it hits the people who weren't going to evacuate and destroys everything there. So during that time, like, when I had made detective. And so, for the way we would get deployed and go to A shift and B shift. So, like, instead of just doing your regular schedule, it's like, all right, you're rotating, you know? So for me, like, one day before the storm, it's like, hey, sorry, dude, you're low man on the totem pole, newly promoted. You are going to go to this school and you're going to get deployed and you're going to be security and watch out for people who are going to be there as a shelter for the next 3 days. Awesome. So really, that was the first thing. I had to tell my wife, I can't get home to board up the house. I need you to pack all your shit that's important to you. Take the dogs. Go stay with your brother in Georgia, right? So that kind of sucked. That was one of those things where I'm like, man, this is awful. Now, not only that, but I'm just sitting here, like, you know, just waiting. Can't get to my house, you know, just waiting for everything to be completely washed away underwater. House did almost flood in the days after. That was the first thing. The second thing that had me be like, I got to get out of this, was actually not a negative thing about law enforcement in general, but
One of my birthdays, my wife got me the Extreme Experience, like, you know, laps in the hype or supercars. So I got to take, and this was when Palm Beach International Raceway was still the thing. Awesome track. And I got to take a 458 Italia, a 488 GTB, and a Lambo Huracan. So three amazing poster cars, like, and I got to drive those around a track, like, balls out. I got the two Ferraris up to 140 on the straight. Took the Lambo about 150 or 148, something like that. But in the middle of the most incredible, exciting experience in my life, probably, was when I was on that back straight in that Lambo doing 150 miles an hour, smiling ear to ear, like you can't imagine. Like, I have video of it, everything. Like, my world is literally changing in this moment. And I swear to God, before that late apex at the end, in my head, I'm like, I will never be able to afford to do this doing what I'm doing. Bro, not even joking. So that night, this is 2017.
That's how I feel every time. We got the Tennessee Drivers Club meet. So you see your typical, there's a lot of Corvettes, a lot of, like, expensive supercars, but not out of the realm.
Yeah,
and then Tom pulls up.
Yeah, it's like, what's he driving today? It depends on his shoes. I don't know. Like, the pea coat that he has. Sorry, Tom. The pea coat goes really well with the F8 now, but maybe it's the McLaren later. So I got home that night. I'm like, how do people make so much money? and that's actually what I learned.
And, like, what is the unanimous answer?
Dude, 80% get their wealth through real estate. Real estate. Man, of all the business magnets out there, it is real estate. And so that's what got the seed going. But also, for me, during that whole time and stuff, you have to keep in mind, like, it's not that the ceiling was low, but I was excelling extremely well in what I was doing. And in my mind, I'm like, I'm going to be a cop forever. Like, I'm detective now. Like I'm on the right track. Like, this is going to be what I'm going to do in perpetuity, right? Like, you make these plans and you have these ideas, and then things happen in life that set you onto this course and pivot, and you just have to go through it.
It could be half a second of something.
Bro, just a moment of clarity. Yeah. That's all it takes.
You see a speedometer hit 150 and you're like,
I'm in a Lambo.
This is it.
Dude, and you know what's so funny is, I swear to God, when I got into the first one I did was the Ferrari 458. I remember it was silver outside, or, you know, it was like it wasn't quite Nardo, but it was like a silver, a really nice color. And I get inside and all I remember is the smell of leather. Because I was so sensory overloaded and so puckered. I swear, dude, you couldn't hammer a toothpick up my ass with a 20-pound sledgehammer. I was so amped up, like, this, oh my God, I'm going to crash this thing. What's going to happen? I just remember the smell of the leather, and I knew there was an instructor sitting next to me. That's it, right? And then the 488, like, I started to get a little bit more of a feel for it, really liked it, started, you know, oh, supple leather.
They kind of step you up into the price game. Yeah.
Exactly, after a few laps of each. And then by the Lambo, I was like, let's have some fun, you know? So by that point, you know, I feel like I came online. I'm like, I need to figure something out. But, you know, doing law enforcement, like, I looked up to so many people that I worked with, you know, and I had some fantastic leaders over me. Some truly, truly remarkable people that I got to spend time with, or learn from, or be underneath and be developed by. And here I am, like, I got to get out of this.
How do I get out of this? Yeah.
And the last straw was during my time in human trafficking. And it was, mind you, it was just me. I was the only human trafficking detective in the agency. It was a brand new role, brand new position. Basically, the attorney general had an initiative, and there was several things that she went after. And this is my summary of it. This isn't my previous employer's stance, but this is what I surmise, that she had certain things that she wanted to go after. And the sheriff, being a good sheriff, was like, cool, we need to target those things. And they're all really important things.
Well, at the end of the day, government's just a business. It comes down from the top.
Absolutely, man. And politics are so prevalent just in local, and they're so much worse in federal, which is partially my disdain for federal, but you have to go with the flow. You have to adapt to it. But some of it, I couldn't swallow. I couldn't abide by. Didn't want anything more to do with it. One of those, I had a case, human trafficking,
it was more so labor trafficking too, but it was a big, long investigation. I'm, you know, in other jurisdictions, you know, trying to grow. Well, you might have to show a picture of that, but I'm trying to grow a goatee.
We'll get some up there, bro.
And I look,
I think I've seen you in the dark shirt, purple tie.
Oh, so. Dude. Yeah. See, like I was look, like some
looking
detective
like the
wear.
TV detective,
bro. But this thing, like, so, you know, if like I wasn't covered status, like I didn't have to have a fake ID or anything like that, but you know, I was overt. So like, you know, facial hair, carrier, all that kind of stuff, or just jeans, t-shirt, whatever, but trying to grow a beard, dude, it was so patchy. Like it looked like somebody shaved their face, put glue on mine, and then threw it at me, and I caught bits and pieces of it up there. It's actually part of my real estate photo
disguise.
Yeah, part of my real estate photo, which Susie was like, you need to change this or people won't allow you around their kids. I'm like, that's super fair, babe. I still haven't changed my headshot yet, but so do the case, you know, I believe it's still active. It's spawned multiple other federal cases and it's still going. But man, I'll tell you what, 5 months in, finally got a location on this victim, found the victim. It ended up being the end of my normal work day, get a call, from the other person I was working this with. And hey, I think we got a lead on him. Cool. Ends up a 25-hour day. Rescue this kid. Go to question him. He's not from here. Interviewing this kid, trying to get information. You know, he's a victim. We got to, like, we're treating him as a victim.
Yeah.
Like, we want to help you. There's a language barrier. There's so many things that go into it that make it emotional. But we're trying to help this kid, right? Like, we're the rescuers, or so we thought, okay? And good old federal government comes in. We bring them in because it's like, you guys have the resource for this because of how it needs to be handled. This is the big initiative. And it doesn't matter who is in the big White House in DC. Okay. It can be the vegetable or it can be Cheeto Man. It doesn't matter, bro. They all say one thing and they do something totally different. So essentially we rescued this kid. This kid ended up getting shipped back to where home was. Okay. And before that, one of the things that made me, and I get this question all the time, why'd you leave? Why'd you leave? Great job. Why'd you leave?
And I think I asked you that one time too, because law enforcement's always been a big interest of mine, because that's what I wanted to do outside of sports.
Yeah.
And it's always like, what changes it?
You know, this was a defining moment because long day, tired. Like I was miles away. We had to go four counties away to find this kid, to get this kid. And I'm supposed to be rescuing him, right? I'm supposed to be the one that's like the light of hope. And this kid straight up told us, if you send me home, they're going to kill my parents because I have to send money back home for them. And I can't work if I'm not here. No bullshit. That is absolutely what he said. So here we are rescuing this kid.
Essentially a death sentence for
government
his parents.
Sends him home. And at that point, I'm like, what the fuck am I doing here? Like, who do I stand for? So I'll try not to think about it too much because it's definitely a really, really challenging thing.
You can definitely tell the demeanor shift in you when you talk about something like this. Like, yeah. One that's driving in your early career now into this where you can kind of see that passion just kind of dies away.
And it has to because, you know, what I found, you know, as I grew in law enforcement, you know, because I got into it, I wanted to help people. I wanted to put bad guys away. I wanted to do all these things. And some of it is true that they sell on you. And some of the things you aren't able to do because of politics or you're restricted, right? But for me, I wanted to do all those things. And I wanted to be able to help people and be empathetic for them, right? To meet them where they are, you know, to show them, like, I understand, like, or even though I haven't experienced what you experienced or what you're going through, like, I'm here to help you. Yeah. I can be an advocate for you, right? And you go through that, and more I started to become, my values and who I was as a person became more and more incompatible with the job, okay? And that was a defining moment because it's like, I'm not going to be this person anymore. Like, well, I don't want to.
To relate to anything business related, anything driving related, anything that you do from a hobby to a job, if you're not enjoying it,
yeah,
you're not going to be the best you can be at it.
Yeah.
At some point it becomes a job.
Yeah. Well, that makes me think of, you know, purpose, right? When I got out of it, and you know, I'm going to guess, and you can tell me, you can echo if this is
if this is accurate or not, but I'm going to guess when you got out of pro ball, okay, in the league that you were in, and you had to pivot and transition out of that. And then when I got out of law enforcement and we moved 700 miles away to get a fresh start and do something different, I'm going to assume that you felt directionless and purposeless, and it had a very negative effect on you mentally.
When we touched on this, I can't remember if it was episode one or two with Frank or Anthony. When I got out of baseball and I knew it was the last ball that I threw, not necessarily like released from the Braves, I can play somewhere else.
Yeah.
The last professional baseball that I threw, which I still have upstairs.
Yeah.
It hit me like a ton of bricks. I was depressed for probably a good year, and I didn't want to do it. Anything. I didn't know what to do. I gained 30 pounds. Like when I was playing, I was between 190 and 200 pounds, and I haven't been that weight since.
Yeah.
Like that's how much it shifted my life.
Right.
Hope says, oh, I like the way they are, dad bod, yay. But like I noticed the difference because baseball was my whole life.
Yeah.
Like 190 pounds is where I was at since high school.
And what did that feel like when you got out? What did your mind go through? I mean, I know it was a dark place, bro.
I don't know. Like there were so many options that you could think of, like dark places too. Like it got bad.
Yeah.
And
it comes out in so many ways.
I've never shared it because the people that we can relate to are all going through the same thing. So it's not like, hey, I need help. I got to go talk to this person or people that you play with that are still continued to play.
Yeah.
You kind of lose contact with.
But here is why what you and I are doing is so valuable and so important in this moment, right? And what you're doing through this podcast and what Susie and I are doing through ours is touching on these vulnerable things that everybody goes through, but people don't talk about.
Well, they don't understand that you're not the only one going through it.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing I want to put through this whole podcast is you're not the only one going through this, and there's still another path.
Right.
Whether it be the one you planned, which 99 times never works out. You can plan anything and the wind will blow the door shut.
Yeah.
You have to go somewhere, find a different path.
And you have to, it's not what you have to do, it's who you have to become, because you have to change the person that you were because you're no longer that person. Even if your whole identity was baseball, my whole identity was.
It was. That's all I ever knew.
Yeah. That's it. And you thought that was the future. You thought that was going to be it forever, right? In perpetuity, as long as you could do it, you know, and then when you get that kick in the ass or you fall.
So I'll say this. The day the last game when it ended, it felt like every other day for the next 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
That fourth day was probably the worst one. It kind of hit home, be like, I'm not going back to the field.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And
that really shifted my whole life.
Right.
Granted, I got out of baseball. I decided to retire. It wasn't like I was kind of pushed out. The divorce with Dane, and now that we have custody of him, that's kind of what shifted into I need to take priority on him versus my career 1,000 miles away.
Yeah.
Which kind of makes me a little easier in that sense that it wasn't just like cut out from under me. It was my decision to be like, I've been doing this 16 years. It's time to focus on
names. That right there is so key, because I think that's how I was able to at least eventually reason my way through, is because I made the decision to leave.
Yeah.
It makes
a big difference. Like,
whereas it was your,
yeah.
Yeah. You know, and you see that, you know, your personal and professional life with so many people.
Best example I can think of right now is Tom Brady.
Yeah.
He could have retired 5 years ago at the top of his game. And now it's like, it's slowly cresting that hill, and he's grasping at it. Cause in my mind right now, I think I could go play and do exactly what I did.
Yeah.
36. That ain't going to happen. I'm gonna have to do something like Disney movie worthy to do anything like that.
Exactly.
And that's not going to happen.
It's like, these don't often happen, you know? And you know, when that happened, and which was the club started out of necessity, right? Because we're up here. I am a very disagreeable person by this point. And my wife is diving into her new leadership role, and like, I'm sulking, or I'm just angry or depressed, all the above, whatever.
It changes your whole attitude with family members. Just like, nobody wants to be around you.
Right.
Not necessarily you're saying something or yelling at them. It's just, there's the aura around you that's like, I don't want to be anywhere near him.
You know, and what happened,
it came to a point, and that point started TDC essentially when
get
she
off
was
your
like,
ass and go find some friends.
Go make some friends. You know, I'm like, loud and clear, babe. I already had my real estate license by this point. I was already trying to get business, but like, you know, what a smart and novel idea. Let's start a new career, move where you know nobody but the person you lay down next to, and then try and, you know, start doing a business that relies heavily upon your sphere, your network, the people you know. Yeah. Oh yeah, dude. What a fool's errand. But you know, I found that, you know, when we really got into the flow with the group, like that's where I really started to find a lot of my purpose, because I feel like a man gets his purpose from what he creates and with whom he mates, right? Like, and I can only speak from my perspective, but to me, that's so important because I have to feel like I'm contributing to something greater than myself.
And that's why Hope and I enjoy the TDC so much, not necessarily for all the cars, the drives are fun, but like stuff like the boys home.
Yeah.
That
we've done nine boys homes together, by the way, guys, yeah, and we're gonna do much more. And
I don't really post about it. Like, I'll be like, oh, Tennessee drive group, we're doing this, but I don't post a lot of information about it.
Yeah.
Because a lot of those boys' identities are hidden. Like, we can't take pictures at the location.
It's protected status. Yeah.
And I think that's what I like about it the most is people see me and Hope and the business that we've created around here. And you can see, even for Aaron, for example, everybody sees his cars, but nobody really knows him outside of that.
Yeah.
Helping people is probably the most enjoyable thing that we can do.
Yeah.
And then when people say that are outside of that mindset, they'd be like, oh, well, pay my water bill. Yeah. Not something like that. Right. It is somebody that truly needs help and support.
Dude, when we, like, how amazing is it whenever we bring them all the gifts and stuff and just like hearing their screeches and seeing their faces when they're opening the gifts or getting their own clothes. Like, one of the kids on our last one had never received a Christmas gift before in his life.
Yeah.
16 years old, and we are the ones bringing him not just a badass caravan of amazing cars, brought the fire department out, all that, but like, we are literally there to bring him a gift for the first time.
Not the group. Like, we had bags for them specifically, each individual.
Yeah.
And I think that's what really makes the difference, rather than like your Walmart or Goodwill or just throwing it into a pile and they distribute it. It's no, you're more personable to that specific person.
Right there, man. Firsthand. It's not just like, let me go ahead and round up.
You get to see that reaction.
Yeah. Instead of just rounding up, you know, your dollar to the next so that way you can cut Walmart a break on their taxes, you know, when they don't. Like, we are literally giving back firsthand directly. And it's so rewarding. And, you know, doing that has given me so much purpose. Seeing all of you guys, for me, it's a unique perspective, you know, being the one to put it together, curate it, and you know, kind of make sure it as a steward, right? But it's amazing just watching all the relationships, like all the connections happen. You know, you get to see people who maybe didn't have a big social sphere before, or maybe didn't have a lot of friends or people who are quality. And then now, like, you know, seeing them now where they're interacting with each other, or one person in particular now has so many people commenting or interacting with them, or they're hanging out outside the group. Like, it's just awesome. Well,
even businesses, like, we have electricians, plumbers, real estate agents, everything. Like it's
doctors, huge network. CFO, and you have so many people from walks of life, and it's great for me because now I get to surround myself with mentors, right? I get to see other people who didn't think that they were capable of doing more, but now that they're entrenched in it and now they look around and see all these other inspirational people, they are able to be inspired and do more, right? So it's like, it perpetuates itself. We feed the positivity, and because we do it in the way we do it, it's able to sustain it. And like,
essentially, what we just did with that boys' home is what I'm trying to do with this podcast. It's like, we went to that boys' home, and they see all the nice cars. And one of the big things, like, what do you guys do for a living? Your typical question. And it was, some of us started out just like you.
Yeah.
And that kind of, that you see that, man, that half a second pause. Eyes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like some of us had, you know, some of the group had been, you know, on both sides of law enforcement, you know, with one of our boys sharing inspirational stuff when he talked about his time. You know, the years that he had been locked up and stuff. And that, like, it just resonated so heavily with them. You know, like, even if we can just change the course of one
person,
just one, you know?
Like, I think we're about to cross 500 followers with this podcast, which is more than awesome. I imagined to begin with, but it only took one view to put the message across.
And you know, doing it more and more, it allows, seeing more and more people go for what they want in life, it makes me realize, like, I need to be not only seeking my own greatness, but seeking greatness in other people. And a wonderful way to do that is just to offer encouragement, right? Is to be there, is to be supportive, but also, like, be honest, be forthright with people and tell them, like, this is my perspective. This is how I think. This is how I analyze things. You know, I want you to be better. And that's why I'm doing things the way that I am.
It's okay to disagree with people and still be friends.
Yeah.
I think that's a big disconnect online right now.
A lot. That really gets lost. Like, you want to have diversity. You want to have diversity of thought. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that is so important that people think differently, approach situations differently. You know, my wife and I were very different. Like, I'm extremely analytical and she is, but there's differences there, right? Like, and a lot of that is the cop thing. Like, she hasn't tried to sit down in a restaurant facing a door in well over a decade.
So, like, Hope just caught on to that with me.
Yeah.
Recently, within like the last year. And you finally see, once we go to sit down, like Texas Roadhouse, she'll go to sit down and be like, nope.
Yeah.
Because the door is behind her.
Yeah. And you know, doing the job and stuff, like, it, I think, like, I don't dream, right? Like, I very rarely remember dreams. And majority of the time that I do remember them, I wake up and I'm either dying or I'm surviving. And it sounds bleak or it sounds crazy, but to me, it's actually not like a scary thing. Cause then I just think and I analyze, like, how can I, you know, do things differently, situation. And that happened because you have to ingrain that in your mind, because literally walking up to a sound complaint and next thing you know, like, they're carrying your casket, right? Yep. It's a real reality. Funny thing this morning, you know, like, we go through, Susan and I, we wake up, you know, have coffee, whatever, have a quiet time, and like, hey, well, you know, what'd you dream? Blah, blah, blah. You know, so one of hers is like a funny thing that she had, like, with, you know, an old parody of Johnny Cash and something else. And she's like, what about
something
you?
Something so vivid. Yeah.
And me, I'm like, I was jumping off the side of a semi because another semi was crashing into it. I'm like, oh, all right, cool. Like, that's a little bit different. But that shit, like, it happens, you know? Like, you think about these things. But I say that to say that I look through a different lens now. And I'm so thankful for that. And yeah, there's certain calls that I think about every single day. There's certain things in my mind that I'll never shut off, will never go away. But I'm thankful for that because I get to, like, look around and smell the roses, right? I get to stop and appreciate all the things that are going around and I have my days where I get caught up on the trivial shit, or these people are running me ragged, or, you know, this should have gone this way.
Everybody has bad days.
Absolutely. But then you stop and you just have to have such intentional gratefulness to think about, like, I'm here. Like, I am here right now. I'm in a place that I never thought I was going to be. Even when I made it on law enforcement, I'm like, I can't believe I made it here, you know? And then I just kept accelerating and growing from there. And if you don't stop and intentionally think about where you are, it's much harder to look at where you're going and be happy about it. You know, you really do have to look for that. And that hits a lot with purpose, right? Like, you know, I feel like purpose is where your ability, your passion and your potential all kind of coalesce, right? Like, where they come together, and everybody has a superpower and a lot of them just don't know it yet. So it's like,
you just got to find it,
figure out what your superpower is and you can't
do that sitting on the couch.
You can't. Yeah. Right. Like, you, and people are like, well, I'm not motivated, blah, blah, blah. And you know, better than anybody doing what you've done before with sport, motivation is a crock. It's not a real thing. It only comes after you start pursuing something.
You have to have a small taste of something, a small taste of success to be motivated to do more.
And you have to put yourself in the situations that are challenging in order to get more taste, to have more wins, to learn more lessons. Like,
that also goes into work ethic. You have to be willing to put in the work to go look for something like that. And that's something that can't be taught. If somebody doesn't have that type of ethic, it's not going to happen.
And you didn't start when you ordered your $2,500 in materials and you were working out of that little house to do.
No, I thought it was a waste of money.
Bro, you had no idea where it was going. And it wouldn't have been fair for somebody to show you the future of where it was going. You had to put in the work. You had to embrace the suck, right? Put in the long, grueling hours to build what you build and have the appreciation.
I feel like I still do. I mean, it's been 8 years now, and I'm still at the shop every
day. Bro, it doesn't matter when you retire. Yeah. You're still going to be doing something. You know, Susie and I, our purpose, you know, like, I'm doing real estate now, and I love it, but I want to do so much more. I want to build. I want to develop, you know.
And that goes with what me and Frank talked about in episode one is – that type of mindset in a person, there's always, whether you're successful at something or not, it's what's next.
Yeah.
You're always looking for something else.
You know, there, you have to be fulfilled by what you're doing. I'm starting to learn a little bit, like I'm on this like philosophical journey in my head, and you know, like trying to figure out what my ikigai is, which is, you know, essentially like your life's purpose, right? Like what the world needs, what you enjoy, what you love doing, what you're great at. And the more and more I get into this, it's like the more and more I see I have these dreams, like, you know, daydreams, right? Like Literally I'm imagining these things that could happen, or these alternate routes that I can go and build my future or our future, or different things that Susie and I can build together, and how these feed off of each other, or the different layers. But I never would have had that thought process had I not been forced to grow and adapt. Because before, my goal, I'm going to make it 30 years in law enforcement. Hopefully I'm not going to get shot and killed.
Get the pension, get retirement.
Exactly. And you're done, yeah. But dude, the life expectancy for cops is dog shit, right? Like that was, you know, something that you started to see, like we would always get death notifications for people who just retired.
And I feel like it's a lot more so now. Like we talked about before, I asked you if you were around with the George Floyd thing.
Yeah.
And you had just got out before that happened. And I've got a lot of friends in law enforcement that said from that day forward, not necessarily the last 10 years before that, but from that day, completely changed their outlook on their job.
Yeah. A lot of it changed, you know? And I had some other things like, what was it? Eric Garner. We had, Brown. Was it Michael Brown? We had a few things, and then they started, you know, there was that year where cops were just getting assassinated, like the three in Texas who were murdered. I think that was 2016. And so like constant fear, but it just became normal, right? Yeah. And it was only until the last couple of years that I stopped and asked my wife.
I think that's what everybody's fear is with school shootings now in the U.S. Yeah. is it's becoming so normal that it's doesn't seem as serious to when you hear about it the next time.
Yeah.
Like another school shooting, not, right. Oh my God, let's stop and watch this thing.
Yeah.
Kind of like a 9/11 scenario where it's never happened before. It's the biggest tragedy in the U.S.
Right.
Now school shootings are a 5-minute news segment. Yeah. And then you hear if they're over or not a week later.
Right. You know, it shifts. There's definitely a cultural shift, and there's so many nuances to what the cause is or what the problem is. And none of it is, it's actually not even possible to be solved, in my opinion, right? But you have a better understanding. You understand people where they're at, but people just don't value life. If more people stopped to look beyond themselves, if you are forced to look at other people and empathize and feel for other people, you will feel more for yourself and want to understand yourself more. The more that I understand other people, the more I understand myself better. And that allows me to be a better son, a better friend, a better husband, you know, a better brother. Like it just allows me to think further and more so for other people than just myself. Sure. Like I do things that are self-serving, you know, there's things that I want in life. There's steps that I want to take that will be better for me. But you know, I'm of the thought process, it's not selfish unless it hurts somebody. So how can I build a life for myself where I can literally benefit other people, help them win, because through their victories and wins, I'm going to get everything I want in life as well.
Take something from them to better yourself.
And that's where people have such a disconnect. And I'll tell you, like, social media is such a big part of it. Like now you have people who just want to value status or things, you know, and they don't value people nearly as much, or they don't value having an impact. And I'm so thankful for the opportunity that we have, you know, in the group together, because I feel like that gives me such a big sense of purpose. It's like, I need to do more. And when I say I need to do more, I'm literally uncomfortable. Like I'm vibrating. Like I need to do something more, something greater. And I didn't always have that, because again, I became incompatible with law enforcement. Law enforcement was, I'm going to go to work. Fuck this person, not my problem. Fuck you, not my problem. I'm going to do my job, do it well, and I'm going to go home. And I could not live in that place anymore, right? It wasn't healthy for me. And I mean, that comes out in so many different ways, man. People are concerned, you know, about, or people have the mindset or the thought process that law enforcement is this overtly dangerous thing. And sure, it has dangerous parts, right? You know, but statistically, you're not going to go get killed, right? Get shot at a house, right? Statistically, it's going to be a car accident, right? Because they're so, you know, somebody's not paying attention, or the cop is so consumed with what they're doing, they're not going to put their seatbelt on, you know, hauling ass to a call. But the biggest one, man, is going to be the way they treat their bodies, the mental health,
affects their physical health, which leads to obesity, heart disease.
And that's Miata baseball, or suicide, man. That 30 pounds never went away.
Bro, what a difference. Yeah. And you just start treating your body differently, and you have to like stop and think like, man, I was working with detectives younger than me who were losing their hair, who were on heart medication. I'm like, this is not good. Like, I don't have much going for me other than the mop on top, bro. Like, I've been able to maintain the hairline decently enough. Like, if that goes, I'm screwed. So, you know, when you look at it from that perspective, and it's not just law enforcement, it's like, what are you doing in life? If it's not fulfilling you, if it's not feeding you, making you want to be greater than you are you in the right place? You know, because so many people get into these different fields and jobs, and like, they're consumed with it. The stress is killing them. Cortisol dumps all the time in their brain. It's affecting their neural pathways, changing how they're wired. And they don't realize that it is actually killing them, you know? And
by the time they do realize, if they do, it's past the point of no return.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. You know, like, I've definitely formed some different, I haven't been diagnosed with PTSD. I believe in therapy, even though I really haven't gone much other than, you know, doing like couples counseling and stuff like that. But I absolutely know there's certain things that I know are signs of like PTSD, but they're not negatives to the degree that I experience them. Some other people, the whole world crashes on them every waking breath. I'm fortunate that's not me, but I do think and I do analyze things differently. And for me, again, I feel like that feeds, because of my experience that I've had, I feel like that feeds on my ability to look at problems differently and then just to have a better outlook on life.
You have a lot more training than the average person to deal with difficult situations in that regard, especially when it comes to interacting with people.
Dude, I'll tell you what, you know, I'm very thankful because I may have analysis paralysis on certain things where, you know, like, certain documents matter, right? Or like, yeah, let me not have bourbon yet, you know, because I got to write this off, or let me not jump into, you know, having a little bit of that delicious juice. But I act, right? And so, you know, we're good balance, my wife and I, but because, you know, she wants to analyze, make sure, you know, checks and balances, all this. I'm like, let's fucking go. Like, let's go. Let's get this done. Like, let's jump into it, you know. And it's good because when I'm like way up in the clouds, she's pulling me down, you know, tethering me to earth and helping come up with a plan for it. But, you know, it allows me to, like, I don't hesitate in a lot of things. Like, I know that it's fight, flight, submit, right? Like, if I don't move off the X, I die. So I need to get in motion. I need to get things going. So when it comes to business stuff, there's certain times where, yeah, like, I, you know, obviously, you know, I think through all the scenarios, but there's other times where it's like, let's jump out the airplane and build the chute on the way down, bro. You know, like, I mean, for you, dude, like, when you played ball, there's a lot of science, there's a lot of mental game to it, but like, how, you know, what did you experience when you were on the field, man, against these wild competitors, people who were as good as you were? I mean,
so I didn't realize I was in that bracket, because my whole life coming up, I was always told, you're the best, you're gonna make it, you're gonna make the big leagues. It's always been that, right up until like the second level of pro ball.
Yeah,
I was in that kind of outsider bracket where it was one of those one percenters that really, I didn't have to work for my results that I was getting on the field. And then I got to the next level where it was, I was doing just enough. Mm-hmm. I wasn't excelling. I wasn't standing out. And then by that time, I didn't have the work ethic off the field to keep up with it, to make up for that deficit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I wasn't open to that, or my eyes weren't open to that until after I was out of baseball. Until I matured a little bit.
Yeah.
And then I was kind of like, well, I wish, it's just like with the kids now, Hope is really good with the kids. And if Ariel brings her a picture that she wrote, it's like, oh, that looks amazing.
Yeah.
I don't want to look at it like that, because if it does, nobody's going to tell her that it could be better. You know what I mean? Like, it sounds harsh that way, but I'm just trying to go through my mindset here is, I always want them to think that there's always more you could do to not be like, oh, I don't have to work at something. You know what I mean?
See, because there's, you guys are a good balance there. And because basically that's what you're looking for, because what you don't want to do is be like, this goes on the fridge and it's a pile of dog shit. And you're like, I'm just going to encourage them and make them think that they have good ability.
All it takes is one person to come in and be like, who drew that?
And then they go into the real world and they suck, right?
That's the fear.
Absolutely. Yeah. But you also, you know, don't want to be like Jos Verstappen, you know, like, and expects excellence of champion out of every, you know, so it's like, it's a funny balance, but you know, I feel from, you know, I don't have kids, but I understand that, because, you know, you want to raise someone who is not only competent, but knows that they can improve at something.
Well, look at Dane, for instance, he's growing up very much like I grew up at his age.
Yeah.
Hoping I make decent money. He's got a good life. He basically would get anything he wants.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the mindset outside of that of, he's just started chores now. And it's like, well, why do I have to do this?
Right.
Well, because you sleep upstairs. You know what I mean? Like, it's a give and take.
Yeah.
And if we can't put him through that, he'll leave, go to college, move into something, be like, and just expect it from somebody else. And you can't do that.
You guys have such a unique challenge, especially now, right? Because your kids are younger. See, I feel like, you know, because for us growing up, like, we were like the last generation who wasn't immersed in cell phones in our formative years, you know?
Yeah,
like,
I think I got my first cell phone my junior year, I want to say.
Yeah.
Like, and that was, you got to text T9. That shit takes too long.
Did you have Snake or Snake 2 on your old Nokia, which still has a battery charge to this day?
I can hear the chirp now.
Bro, so like, it, you know, things were different, and now you have to be such a reactive parent, but it's like you can't get in the middle of it easily, because they're getting information.
Everything's readily available everywhere,
and it really hinders the instant gratification. It makes kids not understand why they aren't succeeding at something. So if you are just coddling them and telling them, "Oh, everything's great, you're doing wonderful," and then they go get their ass kicked,
one sign of failure, I don't want to do it anymore,
bro. They're gonna check out. How are they gonna know how to do it? Like, it's such a unique challenge these days, you know? So like, I completely understand that balance that you guys are striking. I think it's important.
It's not to let the first sign of failure deter you from climbing, really. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the biggest thing with the internet and the phones, and especially with the younger generation now, is everything's accessible.
Yeah.
So, and if they can't find something, they quit.
Yeah, man. You know, and you being the entrepreneur that you are, you know, me being the entrepreneur that I am, I think that, and dude, this podcast is perfect for it, because it's like, here is something, a target that you can shoot for. These are two guys that didn't have all this crap figured out and planned before.
I had a script that I was playing in my head. It was baseball, and that's where it was going. I didn't look away from it.
Yeah, and now we're figuring out who we are, what direction we want to go, what's next, right? Like, we know our discipline, we know what we're good at, we know what we want to excel at, but all those strengths have only come out of necessity when the last thing didn't pan out, you know? And it's so important for people just to take that mindset, like, be ready for growth.
You have to be open. You have to be open for anything.
Yeah. And it's okay. Like, the more you fail, the more chances you have at success, right? So take that gamble, like, get into it. You know, for me, like, dude, I have been up and down my entire real estate career. It's been feast or famine. I've had amazing streaks. I've had terrible streaks, right? But the same thing rings true. I am always pushing forward. I am always looking to do right for the next person.
That work stays consistent. And that's the biggest thing. Because if you can stay consistent, everything's going to go like this.
Yeah. And whether it be the case that I was working before, whether it be, you know, the negotiation I'm doing for my client, or, you know, or the club, whatever it is, like, I'm able to lay my head down at the end of the day and know that I did my best and know that I did right by somebody else. You know, it's not something that I have to worry about. My integrity isn't on the line, because I am who I am and nobody's going to influence me differently. I think that, you know, with the club, it's a labor of love sometimes, you know, because it does take work, but it's so rewarding. And it's just one additional thing that I get to do, or a unique thing for me.
Well, I think it allows us as members to get away from our regular daily lives.
Yeah.
We're so stressed out with either businesses or work or our own families. We can finally, like, not have to worry about any of that.
Yeah.
And we go to help somebody else.
Yeah. And I see how important it is for me to get around other people like you guys, you know, who are thinking differently or doing things that are monumental to me that I strive and achieve for. See, how I know I'm doing it right is because when I see somebody doing something incredible, remarkable, wealthy, you know, whether it be monetary in their life, relationships, whatever, I don't look at that and be like,
I'm jealous. I want that. Yeah. Right? I don't get jealous. I get inspired.
It's not I want that. It's how do I get there?
Exactly. Like yeah. I want to have the experiences that they had, the pitfalls, the difficulties, or learn from those that they had. Like I want to be around them so I can pick up those nuggets.
And that's how I want to do this with the people that we interview is yeah. they don't have to go through those downfalls to learn from them.
Yeah.
They can listen to them.
Yeah.
You might run into some eventually. It's inevitable.
Yeah.
But you can learn from them and at least be aware that when they're happening in the moment, you're like, I can change this outcome.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the big benefits to me is like, you know, they're throughout the last several years, you know, I've spent not just, you know, wheel time getting wheel therapy with, you know, these people. Like we've gone to dinner, you know, we've hung out at different houses. We've done all these different things, had pool parties, you know, at different houses and, you know, gatherings, birthdays, all sorts of stuff. And it's really nice because I can still feel like I have a fulfilling social life while getting to spend all of my time diving into my other disciplines and focuses.
Well, you originally started this club to make friends and you've made some of the closest friends that you have now.
Yeah. And it's fed me, man. I've been so fortunate. I've gotten business out of it. People know, like, and trust me. So they lean on me for things and it gives me the opportunity to continue that. You know, it's like, I'm not just helping them. Like now I'm like, you know, shopping for their sister or their brother, or their mom. And so it's literally putting food on my table. Right. So I think the lesson for me.
So what you're saying is your wife was right.
Thank you. So what it boils down to is do more for others, seek those opportunities, and it comes back on you, man. It really does. And sometimes, yeah, you got to deal with the occasional jackass or, you know, you got to like.
That's life. That's life in general. Yeah, that'll always be
there.
You
got to protect yourself and watch out for those around you. You know, watch out for the herd, but. You know, I don't. I think the group is private now. I can't even get requests for it anymore.
I think we actually last year you started that we actually have to bring somebody to an event before they yep. can get invited.
And they can't even you can't even find the group. You can find our page, but I took everything else offline.
Yeah, I think the group that we interact with as members isn't available online. Yeah,
yeah. I think there's like 1,000 or 900 requests.
We're special.
Or something, yeah, bro. That's right. Just the whiff of my own.
That's where you gotta get the tea and.
Yeah. But you know, it's been good, man. I can't wait to see what we do over the next. Because I'm like, man, we've got to do some.
It's
cool
springtime.
Stuff.
I think yesterday was first day of spring, yeah. So we got to do something. Even though I don't have a car right now,
dude. Yeah. I mean, you do.
That's we'll get
and
overrun
just
by her.
Put Hope in the SUV, yeah. And she'll be hauling
that. Won't,
ass out
that won't
there
ever
too.
Happen. But, she's thinking about selling that now that she likes the M3 so much.
Really, man, that thing's all set up now too. But I'm excited for what lies ahead for us in the years. Cause you know, for me, like I have to balance like wanting everything now. Like for me, I'm like, damn it. I want to do more. I want to be more successful. Like, you know, trying to quiet that before I wasn't, that wasn't always my programming, but now it's like, I need to do more. But I'm like, if this is where we're at together as a group now, like I can't wait to see where we get to eventually in the next couple of years, you know, like I talked about a little bit about this year as far as I want to partner with one of the foundations. I want to do like a live adoption for animals. I want to kind of bring some of that in. There's other things that I want to layer in that is awesome opportunities for us to give back. But I'm like, dude, like let's go hit the bourbon trail, man. Let's go to VIR. Let's get a track
some sort of big excursion away from the area.
Yeah. You know, let's go drive up, you know, through Kentucky or, you know, see some cool stuff, you know, down in Georgia. Like let's do that as a group and kind of build more on those relationships. And it really helps me feel like I'm not missing out, you know, cause again, like work a lot, focus on that. Tired every day, bro. I know you relate. I know you are, right? Like,
well, I mean, like I said, because we had this interview today. I was at the shop today at 5:30, just to get everything I could get done that I needed to be able to do this. Like this, like we said before, this is my outlet from the shop. This isn't something I have to do. It's not something I'm obligated to do. It's something that gives me an outlet now that I don't have baseball. I don't have any more motorcycles because the wife is like, nope, you got kids now.
That's smart.
I think
of
the last one I had, we bought brand new in August and it was sold in February. So it was, she was like, we drove it on the street once. She's like, nope, not going to happen. Yeah. So we sold that and now it's cars. It's the group and the work. Cause we don't have, like I said, we don't have close friends. We don't have really time to have close friends over all the
demand,
time.
Demand, bro.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's hot, and it's not going to shift anytime soon. So it's like, I need to get out and I need to drive, or I'm going to lose my mind and implode like a dying star.
And the good thing about my line of work anyway is driving is networking for my business.
Yeah. Yeah, so absolutely. And for me, I'm like, well, you know, I did drive a little tax write-off right here, and we drove over here. Client appreciation, a little tax write-off over here. But now going forward, you know, for me personally, you know, I'm doing the real estate thing now. I'm learning everything I can. I'm learning electrical. Eventually, I'm going to learn framing. I want to build, man. I want to develop.
That's how Hope's dad is a lot. He's got degrees in everything you can imagine. Every 3 or 4 years, he goes back to online school to get something else certified in. So,
and you know, it's so funny because it's like, I hated school, but man, do I love learning. Like, I just love, and you touched on it too.
I think that's a lot. A lot of people don't realize that once you hate school once you're in it, but once you're out of it, you're like, I'm going to spend the next year learning this.
Yeah. And I just, and there's times where like I felt as an adult, it's like I minor in so many things, but I major in few, and I'm working on that as a person to be better about that. So that way I can leverage that talent or those abilities to feed my business, to do bigger things, right?
Even if it just means relating to other people.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't have to be an interest as far as a topic to you, but if you can relate to other people, it really helps from a business standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it feeds itself, because now that I want to do, I eventually want to build, do tiny homes, do multifamily stuff. And I'm working through strategies for how to do that. I'm kind of assembling a team of misfits. So that way we can eventually pivot into that. And I want to do that congruent with everything I'm doing in real estate. But, you know, for me, like, oh, dude, I hate real estate agents. Can I just say that? Like, bro, I hate real estate agents. That's why I'm only friends with maybe 4 or 5. Like, you
it's,
know,
I mean, it's just like any business. You'll get the new ones, the up and coming ones, and be like, yeah, no commission. We'll sell your house.
Oh, dude, and just like it's their whole identity, and like I swear, they're like. Like, you could be on an airplane, somebody's having a heart attack, and be like, is there a nurse on board? And you'd have somebody like, no, but I'm a real estate agent. It's like, shut the hell up. Nobody cares. Like, unless you are, and that's all you, like, you look at their Facebook, that's all it is, real estate, real estate, real estate, whether they're doing business or not, right? So it's like, dude, like, have some humanity. Like, be something else other than that, because I'll tell you, people don't give a shit about that unless they are knee deep.
If it's benefiting
in that process.
Them,
absolutely. So it's like, dude, like post some of the other things that you do, the fun things, time with your kids, or you know, getting out and about.
The perfect thing that I saw on TikTok, ironically, the other day was kind of similar situation where the speaker was talking about, what do you see on Red Bull's Instagram? Entertainment.
Yeah.
They sell energy drinks.
Right.
But they're entertainment. What do you see on your restaurant's Instagram? Your food that nobody really cares about. So post something that
it's
can be relatable to everybody.
Man.
Yeah.
You know, with the whole nonsense that happened with everybody in the world, you know, 4 years ago and everything that continues to happen now, I am of the belief that there's a big shift. People are here for the experience. And that's why we see generational wealth. We don't have it. The younger millennials don't have it. You can bet your ass that Gen Z is not going to have it. The boomers have majority of it. And they actually have double what we had at the same age.
Yep.
Right? Because we are not looking for legacy. We're not thinking about having kids. A lot of people are just having dogs instead. I'm a perfect prime example of that. Right? So we are here for the experience. And with that, you are going to have this major shift in what people value, what people find important, what they want to live for. You know, realistically, it's like, okay, you know, if that's how we need to think about it, how can we cater to those people or that thought process? Let's build something where they can live, they can grow, they can feel, you know, immersed in it and have that experience.
They don't have that, oh, this is my grandfather's farm that he owned for 100 years past
now
that.
It's selling that, getting the
people
money.
People don't own their homes, they rent. So that's not they don't care. It's gonna be somebody else's rental house
and
a year from now.
Dude, and for me, like more and more I just see the value of peace. And for me, it's like I want to have a place
I want to feel like I am distant from others, still be, you know, be able to be reached, you know, and
that's like I said, with this earlier, it's like this house is perfect, exactly perfect layout for the family, our family needs. If I could just scoop under it, pick it up and put it somewhere not where we're at right now, it'd be perfect.
And dude, the market is playing so many tricks on people right now with everything. And that's why you're not seeing so many houses. There's houses on the market, but there's not new blood coming in. Yeah. So people are afraid of where they're going to go and what they're going to do. And I completely understand.
That, like, we have pretty good equity in this house, but if we sell it, then what? We will not find anything close to what this is.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, at the end of the day, it's like, you know, what you do, what I do, what others do, it's like, we're all human. We're all people. Like, we'll figure our way through it, but you just got to have some, you got to have some empathy, man. And you know, like when I was on the negotiation team for, I don't know, like 9 months, something like that. And that's one of the biggest, that's one of the biggest things that you can talk people through is just like unfettered, like direct, positive empathy. And like when you've got somebody barricade, like great example, you know, one guy I've tased in my entire career, shit his pants, by the way. It was a great hit with the taser. He actually pooped his pants. I'm not joking. His mom had to bring him out fresh chores before he went to jail. But anyway, and that was to save his life because we were about to have to kill this guy. But you know, that particular call, it was a dispute, went out there, you know, four of us show up and he's brandishing a knife. He's walking at us. You know, we kind of corralled him and it was like, dude, you need to put it down type thing. Like, and I took point talking to him, hitting with empathy. What's going on? Found out his dad just passed away. He had some drug and mental issues. Shocking, you know, there's it's all tied in, but that's what he was struggling with. And just being able to de-escalate him, because when we first got there, he told us, I can't kill all four of you, but I'm gonna at least take one or two of you with me.
That's gonna be a scary notion coming on scene too.
It is, but man, I'll tell you, once you do it a few times, it's just like it's just anything else. Cause you're just like, I'm acting now. All right, we're here. I need to act. Everything that happens, I need to have a reaction to. And so like, yeah, initially, like when you see you're like, oh my God. But looking back, I thought about getting all my body cam footage from the SO. But looking back, you're like, yeah, that was interesting. But in the moment, you're just acting, thinking through all the scenarios. But ended up able to de-escalate this guy long enough to get the taser on him. It was a great shot. By the way, tasers, there's a major incorrect notion out there that tasers are A, infallible, and B, actually work. Most of the time, they don't work because people don't realize. The poles of your body are split. That was interesting. Sound like a pop.
Probably the mailman throwing something on the door.
Oh, there you go. Boom. shots fired. So there's a notion that like basically the body split up in two poles. So if you want to get a good taser hit and actually incapacitate somebody, you have to hit north of the belt line, south of the belt line. Best way. And you have to. So this guy's brandishing a knife, telling us he's going to kill one of us. And I'm supposed to hit him perfectly in one shoulder and then hit him in the opposite thigh to lock him up.
And know those barbs are going to go.
Oh, exactly. Because one goes straight and the other one goes at an angle. And this is the movie, so I'm going to nail that shot. Well, I actually, it worked out because I did get a little bit of cant and I had a perfect hit and it completely locked him up. But if you don't get that or if you're too close to a subject, it's only going to lock up the muscles between those two polarities of the barbs, right?
And I'm pretty sure that's kind of what happened with the Bunkani incident the other day because they shot him inside the car. So
all you have is this. You're not incapacitating anything else. The hands kill you, right? So those hands were moving around, able to access, and we know what happened for there tragically. Ended up, got a taser deployment on this guy, dropped him. But during that whole time, you know, it felt like forever, but it was about 6 minutes, if I remember. Just talking, de-escalating, seeing what's going on long enough to get a deployment, drop him. Got him, he got evaluated. He ended up, he went into the psych ward, basically. And I think he got some help after that. But my tangent that brought me into that. So that was just one opportunity to just hit people with empathy, meet them where they are, understand them. You know, I've had another one barricaded subject in with his daughter, talked to him for about an hour before SWAT was able to get on scene, blow a hole inside the trailer, rip him out of there. you know, but that is the biggest thing. People don't realize the power that they have. And if you ever stop and you think that you are insignificant or that you can't change the world around you, You need to push that thought out of your mind because you have such an impact on those people around you and beyond. And there's some things that I'm okay at. There's some things I'm not good at. And then there's some things that, with not arrogance, I am sure of myself. I know I am fantastic at. I excel at. And when it comes to my EQ, not my IQ, right? But my EQ, I excel well in it. And so I get to use that. I gained it, a lot of it from law enforcement, and I've been able to use it in so many other things. So I'm, even though I'm not in the profession anymore, even though I have my gripes with it, even though I've
You're using what you learned.
I've absolutely built on those tools that I was able to build while you know, during my time in the field. And it just, even though I got to a point where I couldn't do that job anymore, I'm very, very thankful for the people who do it, especially local, because you know I don't like federal. But I am very thankful for the profession. I think that there's things that are wrong in the profession. I think that there's, my opinion again, things that need to change. I think there's too many laws. I think they're frivolous. And I think that a lot of them are written so that way the people who write them can circumvent them. But honestly, man, you have some of the best people who are willing to say, you know what, that house is on fire. I'm going to haul ass there and I'm going to go in and I'm going to try and save somebody out of it. You have somebody who it takes a special person to
political opinions aside, whether we agree or disagree about anything, those experiences make you who you are now.
Yeah.
Without that, you'd be a completely different person. A
totally different person, man. So I'm thankful, man. I'm just, you know, at the end of the day, I'm glad to have the opportunities I have. I'm glad to be here. Glad that we have our friendship, our relationship, man. Glad we're talking on the podcast. It's amazing to see what you're doing, you know, with your business. It's amazing to see what you guys are doing as far as raising the kids. It's awesome. You know, hope, you know what I mean? Like as far as the adoption and all that stuff, like it takes a special person to do those type of things, but you're David Francis, bro. You know what I mean? Like you're just a guy who just makes certain decisions to do the right thing. And nobody's
just not perfect. On Facebook.
Just not Facebook. Just not on Facebook, you know? But it's like, yeah, you know, we have the opportunity to do these things. You just got to seize all that opportunity, man. That's the biggest thing.
Is if an opportunity is given to you, analyze it first. Don't just jump at everything, but analyze it first and see if that could change your life.
Yeah.
Really, that's the biggest question.
Yeah. Say yes to more, you know, think through it, be ready to jump out and build that chute on the way down, which you have actually jumped out of an airplane. I will one day.
Well, that was kind of the search for finding an outlet that I'd never had before.
Yeah.
And it's become
Bro, I'm here to a tell regular you, thing. There's other ways to do it, but I mean, that's fine.
It's become a regular thing.
Go extreme. You know, some people like to buy a bottle of bourbon, just sit and, you know, look at the trees.
No, but I'll take it to 14,000 feet. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, nah, that you can keep that, man. You can keep that, brother. But yeah,
that's what Hope says too, but I'm determined to push her out of an airplane before we die.
Man. Maybe one day, you know, do you feel like what you're, you know, I know this is an outlet, but I think, you know, there's power in what you're doing. Do you find that it's aligning like with your purpose and not just, you know, it has to, I know it is, but what are you getting out of it as far as what do you see yourself doing with it later on?
The airplane thing, the best way I can describe it is the same sensation as playing in front of 30,000 people.
Yeah.
You get that rush. It's a high. That's the best way to describe it.
Yeah. You're chasing that, buddy. That's a good point, man.
Playing in professional sports and championships and like big situations like that. Everybody's been, or at least most people, at least around here, Tennessee, has been to a big football game and the crowd, I'm not saying camaraderie. I don't know what I'm trying to say, but like the vibe.
Yeah.
They feel energy, that was a big situation.
Atmosphere.
Now imagine yourself on the field.
Yeah.
Cheering for you or against you in away games. That's what I get out of an airplane.
Ooh, buddy, yeah. I don't think you can chase a high like that if you have lines in front of you. It, man, that is just See, I played in high school. My wife and I met in high school, and the way we met, she found our MySpace and then our website. Because I played music. So like, you know, doing that, I thought that's what I was going to do, you know, forever. And what a joke. But, you know, doing that, like getting to play in front of a crowd was awesome. I think the biggest crowd I ever played was a festival. It was like 3,000 people. And that was insane.
But think about how that, like the first time you walk out on stage and you see that.
Yeah.
That's what it feels
adrenaline
like.
Adrenaline.
Leave the
bro.
Door.
Yeah. Like I can absolutely understand, because once you have a taste of that, it's like, man, you got to find another way. Hell, maybe that's partially how I ended up in law enforcement.
At the same
too.
Time, this is kind of like the dark side of it. Yeah. At the same time, if it goes wrong, you're never going to know.
Yeah. Yeah. Shoot, man. It has an interesting effect on you. Take chances. At the end of the day, take chances, man. You know, like, seize those opportunities. You didn't just walk onto the field. Like, you didn't decide one day, hey, I'm going to go play professional ball. And there you go. Next day you're on the field. Like, you worked, you built it up.
It's a long road.
So people are capable of more than what they think.
Yeah.
Absolutely, man.
I think I told you it would be longer than an hour.
I'm good with it, man. You know,
I appreciate you coming on. I think we got more than enough for somebody to work with, at least for this week.
Yeah.
But I want to thank you for coming out and taking the time to do it. I know it's been crazy in the real estate market right now. Yeah. So it's
man, I'm glad to be here, brother. Thanks for the invite. Thanks for extending it and letting me come and kind of waste a little bit of your time. You know,
no such thing as wasting. I'm not in the shop right now. So I take those with right to my heart. I was like, I'm not working right now. I'm enjoying it. So
awesome.
If you guys like what you heard, leave a comment, subscribe.
Yeah.
Anything that you can do to help us out to get us noticed. If, like Matt said, if we can change one person's life, that's all that matters. It's not about 100 million views. I'm not doing this for money. It's a hobby. I mean, we're 5 weeks into it right now and I'm not getting paid for it. So that should say something.
Giving back, man.
But I appreciate you coming out.
Absolutely.
We'll see you guys next week.
See y'all.
As we close this chapter, I encourage you to keep climbing, keep pushing beyond your limits, and keep believing in your ability to overcome whatever obstacles stand in your way. Until next time, keep striving, keep reaching, and keep climbing the ladder to success. We'll see you next week.